You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
As we do every Sunday, we wish to humbly acknowledge that we're on the traditional territories of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nation lands, which lands were previously occupied by the Seneca and Huron-Wendat First Nations. The call to action from the Truth and Reconciliation. Each week, in order to remain aware of our treaty obligations and the relationship we have with our First Nations sisters and brothers, we read one of the 94 recommendations sent to all levels of government by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And this week we're reading recommendation number 45, which is quite deep. We call upon the Government of Canada on behalf of all Canadians to jointly develop with Aboriginal peoples a royal proclamation of reconciliation to be issued by the Crown. The proclamation would build on the Royal Proclamation of 1763 and the Treaty of Niagara of 1764, and reaffirm the nation-to-nation relationship between Aboriginal peoples and the Crown. The proclamation would include, but not be limited to, the following commitments. Repudiate concepts used to justify European sovereignty over Indigenous peoples and lands. To adopt and implement the United Nations Declaration of Rights of Indigenous Peoples as the framework for reconciliation. To renew or establish treaty relationships based on principles of mutual recognition, mutual respect, and shared responsibility for maintaining those relationships into the future. And lastly, reconcile Aboriginal and Crown constitutional and legal orders to ensure that Aboriginal peoples are full partners in Confederation, including the recognition and integration of Indigenous laws and legal traditions in negotiations and implementation processes involving treaties, land claims, and other constructive agreements. Before I share our readings this morning, I just wanted to let you know that over the next 3 weeks, we do have another guest speaker, and his name is Dr. Chris DiCarlo. And Chris calls himself a philosopher, and I find that intriguing. I don't know too many people that would use that as a way of characterizing themselves. Chris is a philosopher of science and ethics whose interest in cognitive evolution have taken him into the natural and social sciences. His research focuses on how and why humans reason, think, and act the way they do. So I think he has a wonderful fit to bring us a message, and I'm quite sure that he'll entertain us and challenge us with his thoughts and with his views. Pat Benatar said, "With the power of conviction, there is no sacrifice." And our readings this morning have been read about 10 days ago. At Greta's review, everyone that was present had the opportunity to take Greta's submission and break into small groups and read and study and comment on it. And this morning we have two selections from what Greta shared with the conference. To the question, do you believe God is calling you to the ordained ministry of word, sacrament, and pastoral care, and do you accept this call? Greta responded in part, "I do understand the importance of conviction as a virtue in our lives, a deeply felt recognition that one is to follow a certain path or forge a new one. I believe such conviction can be inspired by personal experience, both known and unremembered. Our relationships, both good and bad. Our contexts, both the personal and the global. I believe our appreciation of life and our experience of wholeness results from how closely one is able to live according to one's convictions. I believe the spiritual quest is the search for that point of resonance, that place of passion and conviction, where one's own skills and abilities meet the world's greatest needs. I believe the spiritual task is the challenge of living in that place of conviction. Second part of our reading is another question and answer. Do you believe that God is calling you to the ordained ministry? And she responds again in part, I understand my work as an undertaking that both awakens individuals to the importance of creating meaningful lives for themselves and contributing to the meaning-making work of others, and that supports them in that work. It is the work of challenging individuals and communities to reach towards both personal wholeness and social cohesion. The balance which, when achieved, leads to success in the human community. Philip Goldberg identifies 5 significant tasks of religion, which I believe go towards creating that balance, but recognize them as deeply human undertakings for which religion has been the purveyor. They may each be engaged and fulfilled without the need for religious language or doctrine. Goldberg's 5 tasks are beautifully and simply portrayed by 5 words: transmission, translation, transaction, transformation, and transcendence. Transmission, a sense of identity transmitted from one generation to the next through a variety of means: ritual, shared customs and stories, and historical continuity. Translation, of the events of life into a form that helps convey a sense of meaning and purpose, and which helps individuals understand their relationship to the wider community or the greater whole. Transaction, individuals and communities are better able to flourish when the transactions that take place between them are governed by more formal or informal moral codes. These define what right relationship means within the community. Transformation encourages the engagement of individuals and communities in the ongoing maturation and growth in the pursuit of personal and social fulfillment. And lastly, transcendence provides a reference point beyond the individual or community, which challenges them to expand their understanding, to experience themselves as integrated with a larger whole, the web of life. This can be understood as the realization of the impact one has on the vast expanse of life, both during and beyond his or her lifetime, and does not require belief in a supernatural realm. Offered as wisdom for the journey.
It is my honor now to introduce one of our own. Dana Wilson Lee has been a member here at West Hill for 2 decades, but she has not been a spectator. She's been involved. She was a member of the search committee that brought Greta to West Hill that many years ago. She has also served as chair of our board, which Randy is now. And she was here to see many of the important changes that West Hill has gone through in those past 2 decades. One of Dana's legacies is the work that she did to guide West Hill as we became an affirming congregation. We have been so blessed to have Dana with us as one of our architects developing West Hill into what we are today. Dana has recently completed her midwifery education program at Wat Ryerson University, and today she's going to share her thoughts on that career journey. Please give the warmest of West Hillian welcomes to Dana Wilson Lee.
Did you want some water here somehow?
Oh, no, you know I'm good, I think. We'll see. All right. Ha. Okay. All right. I know, eh? But yeah, I didn't want to stand here and like you only see, not see my head because of the microphone. So hopefully everybody can hear me. Good morning. So what I want to talk to today about is sort of springboarding from what Greta's the reading that we heard today, and it just was sort of serendipitous that all this sort of came together, and it really, reading that really spoke to me about conviction. So that's what I'm going to talk about today. But first of all, does anybody know what an elevator speech is? Like, have you ever heard that term? You've heard that term. It's a speech about your story, what it is that you do, or maybe your career goals or your sales pitch if you are selling something, for example. It's short, it's concise, it's intriguing to others, and you should be able to give it from the time you get on an elevator with someone to when you get off the elevator at the ground floor. That's why it's called an elevator speech. It's about 2 minutes, really. Or less. And my cousin, the job recruiter, says everybody should have one. It's like your tagline. So, for example, minister/atheist, or irritating the church into the 21st century. Those are a couple of really good ones, ones that you might be familiar with. So when I tell people that I am a midwife, and very recently a student midwife, the most common question that I get is, why? What made you decide to do that? What brought you to that decision? And many of you who know me well might even ask, why at this stage and age of your life? This, of course, calls for an elevator speech, and mine is, well, I want to transform the lives of moms and babies. Which is a pretty tall order, and I'm going to get to that in a few minutes. But depending on the situation and the audience how much time I have a number of responses, either focusing on my motivation or the circumstances that came together that propelled me to this new vocation, and I do view it as a vocation. And there is also much more to the story, including not only the why, but the how. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. But I think it's important to start by very briefly setting a bit of context around midwives and midwifery in Ontario, just so that we're all on the same page. Midwives are primary caregivers to low-risk pregnant people throughout their pregnancy, and then both to the parent and the newborn until 6 weeks postpartum. Midwives have been regulated in Ontario since 1994, but of course midwives have been practicing long before that. And we recognize that we ourselves are the vocational descendants of the Indigenous midwives who came before and continue to practice with us. How midwifery came to be regulated in Ontario is actually a pretty fascinating story, which I don't have time to go into, but it was the perfect storm of political consumer advocacy, a government willing to take a risk, and a courageous family, and a courageous group of midwives and consumers. Talk to me after if you want to know more about that, or read Ivy Lynn Bourgeau's book, Push, The Struggle for Midwifery in Ontario. It's fantastic. And I should just also make a note that midwifery is covered under the provincial health insurance plan, and we are also able to provide services to uninsured pregnant clients as well, like particularly during the time when refugees were not, their coverage was not being paid for, and when that had been funding had been rolled back by the previous federal government. Midwives were still able to care for those clients, thankfully. Midwifery is a four-year degree, or it can be 5 or 6 years if it's done part-time like I did it. The first three semesters are academic, science, anatomy, physiology, women's studies, studies of difference, review of literature, that type of thing. And then the next 5 or 6 semesters are all clinical placements, where you work providing clinical care and have a full course load with a few week-long intensive courses thrown in for good measure just to liven things up a bit. The program is intense and the work is intense. Midwives and students are on call for their clients 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, except for usually, as a student, you get 4 days off a month. And usually you kind of take them like you take a long weekend. So if a client has an urgent concern or is in labor at 10 p.m. on Christmas Eve and you're on, or your anniversary or your child's birthday, you're on. Or you're having everyone over for a holiday dinner, but your client's labor has started. Oh. Got to leave the prep and the entertaining to your partner. Sorry, honey. So, and actually that did happen to me. I thought it was going to be a bit of a disaster at home, but it was totally fine. And what ended up happening as I was leaving to go to the grocery store to pick up the groceries because we were having 20 people over, I got paged, and client thought she, you know, was saying she was in labor. We went and did an assessment, and, you know, things were kind of puttering along. So we said, okay, well, you know, do some things and page us back when things get going. And as luck would have it, she paged back just as all our guests were leaving. So, that evening. So that worked out. And it worked out well for her, too, since once things got started, things really moved along well for her. So, why put yourself through all this? My passion for midwifery comes from my own experience. As a client, I had fabulous midwives, and I also have done lots of work in healthcare policy development. So I've seen evidence that the midwifery model is excellent for parents and babies, and I wanted to be part of that model. I believe strongly in the client-centered approach of midwifery and of healthcare, and I've seen how midwifery's attention to its three main philosophies, which are informed choice, continuity of care, and choice of birthplace, can be transformational for clients and families by allowing clients to take charge of their own health care. And there's that word transformational. I'm going to get back to that too. I know that that's pretty idealistic, but it's 100% true. But I can also mention there are not so idealistic stuff that kind of comes into it. One, I have been drawn to midwifery ever since reading Our Bodies, Ourselves more than 20 years ago. I was having a midlife crisis at 40. Some people would call it a midwife crisis. And things were sort of stabilizing at home. My partner, Pat, had established his career. That was going along great. Our kids were older. So if I was going to make a change, it had to be now. So that's the why. But there is much more to the story, and that's the how, and that's what I want to talk to you about now. What it means to transform yourself and others, and how this community helps set me on that path, and how each of you has a story you are living out a story that will make a difference in others' lives in both small and large ways. It's that, it's what Greta talks about, making meaning. You all have a story about that. So as you heard in the reading today, Greta says in her response to the Ministry and Personnel Review Committee that she believes that convictions can be inspired by personal experience, both known and unremembered, our relationships, both good and bad, and our context, both the personal and the global. It is these exact contexts that led me into midwifery. It's the relationships particularly. It was in large part through the relationship and friendships I made here, along with encouragement I got from my friends, from my director at the time where I was working, and who I consider a friend and a mentor. It was actually the perfect storm to create change in my life. It started with two things almost happening simultaneously. I was being encouraged by my director, Katya, to apply for a master's degree program to further further my career in the organization we both worked for. At the same time, I was partway through leadership role here at West Hill when I was the chair of the board, and Greta challenged me then about using some of the gifts that I was developing there. And using them in other parts of my life. And I was having conversations with my friend Janice about the next phase in our lives, and she was finishing up a few things, and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, really. And she asked me, any of you who know Janice Meehan, she has a way of just sort of getting right to the heart of the issue. And she asked me, if you could do anything, don't worry about how long it takes or the education or whatever, what would it be? And I said, a midwife. It just came automatically. And that conversation and all these things happening at once really crystallized it for me. So given that I was applying to various programs for a master's in health policy, I figured, well, what the heck, I'll submit another application, I'll fill out another form, write another letter, and apply to Ryerson for midwifery as well. And it was those same people, including others like Debbie and Babette, who supported me by reading over my application letter, for encouraging me to do this. And then I got into the program, and this community cheered with me and gave me so much encouragement along the way. When I struggled with the ups and downs of the clinical placements, and when I awakened to the realization of the sometimes overwhelming responsibility of this new career, and that was quite an awakening, and it shook me to my core, really. You are all here. My excitement, all the firsts and all the challenges overcome, and those times when I thought I'd made a big mistake. This core group was with me, and while I had the support of family and other friends, this community here was here, wrapping your arms around me, encouraging me, as Greta says, and giving me courage to keep going. Even when I was absent from this place, I could feel your presence. And when I returned during breaks, it was always to your love and support. West Hill adopted a mission statement in 2009, just as I was seriously considering applying to the program. It states, "Moved by a reverence for life to pursue justice for all, we inspire one another to seek truth, live fully, care deeply, and make a difference." I think I must have been thinking about that, because in my application letter, to get into the program, I wrote, in part, "I am passionate about midwifery care because it was through a midwife support that I had the gift of a good birth, And by good, I don't mean the way I planned it, or at home, or at a hospital, or with medication or without medication. I mean good at a more philosophical level. I was provided with information to make an informed choice. I was supported in my choice. And I was nurtured through the whole childbearing year by a caring, competent, and confident midwife. A good birth is an immeasurable gift. A baby caught, held, and nurtured and loved from its first moments is the beginning of change in the world. As with my own experience, a mother viewed as a whole person and supported and appropriately cared for following the birth of her child through baby blues, emotional toil, even depression, transforms the world. This has made me profoundly passionate about midwifery. Supporting a woman to a good birth can transform the life of the mother and her child by creating an atmosphere of safety, confidentiality, encouragement, and confidence during the childbearing year. I want to engage my head, heart, and hands to the purpose of creating that atmosphere to contribute and collaborate with a midwifery team and other professionals to bring women and child-centered health to pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. In essence, my contribution would be nothing less than being a small part of transforming the world, one birth at a time. In hindsight, that's a pretty tall order, and it can seem awfully arrogant. But it was something I hung on to during the years and times when I questioned the risk I was taking, and it was a huge risk. It was a big upheaval. So transformation. It never ceases to amaze me, and I'm not sure, and even now I've thought about how to articulate this, and I don't think I'll do a very good job of it, but it's that moment when a baby is born, and they're on the inside, and then they're born, and they're on the inside, and they take that first breath, and they look at their parent, they look at their mother, their father, and it's a transformation from to living, to life, and living on the outside, I guess. And it always, like, that always amazes me at every birth. And that it's that moment of transformation from not breathing air to breathing. And most babies, in my experience, they come out vigorous and crying, and some start to cry even before they're fully born. But one of my first births as a student, the baby was born a little bit limp, a little bit floppy, and needed a little bit of help to get breathing. But he was fine after a bit of oxygen. And this is one in every 100 births babies need a little bit of oxygen just to get going. Afterward, though, I was debriefing with my program tutor, and I mentioned how frightened this had made me, and that those moments waiting for the baby to breathe and cry. And I should say that we've all been trained in neonatal resuscitation. We retrain yearly more than any other health professional. But still, to see it there, it was a little bit shocking. But this calm woman, one of my favorite instructors, she said she agreed it could be frightening, especially when you're starting out. But she reassured me, babies want to breathe. They want to live when they are born. They want to make that transformation to living. We too, I think, want to make transformations in our lives. That's why we're here, to have a community to discuss ideas, strengthen each other when we are in despair or when we feel lost. We're here to encourage each other to take risks. One of the first classes you take as a midwifery student is called Working Across Difference in Midwifery. It addresses the social and societal context of midwifery. It helps inform us of our place in the world as mostly privileged students and how the world is pretty much set up to benefit those of privilege and how it must be to move through the world if you are marginalized by race, sexual orientation, gender identity, and how it must feel to move in a world that is set up to benefit other people. For some of us, and while we would all say we were open to diversity, it sure didn't take us long to recognize and accept our own privilege in this world and seek out ways to counter that privilege, or at least use it to benefit those that have less privilege or a lack of privilege. And it's kind of an overwhelming realization. So in despair, in our thirst for change, we asked our instructor, what can we do to change the system? How can we dismantle the patriarchy? She sighed and she said, being here, taking this course is doing it. Choosing this path is doing it. You are making change. So I would challenge all of you. You look around and you see the injustices, whether they be environmental, racial, sexual, gender, class struggles, animal rights issues, and ask, what can I do? Being here is the start. Being here is the start of change in the world. Advocating for these things is change in the world. Starting a First Nations study group and advocating for those issues is being change in the world. Advocating for West Hill and for Greta is change in the world. And supporting each other as we take risks outside of this place is change in the world. Encouraging each other as we step outside our comfort zone, like many of us did in Midland, is making change in ourselves and in the world. I believe in you, and I believe in this change, and I believe in your ability to make a difference. We've mentioned the Tree of Transformation here in the Gathering Hall. It's meant to honor and commemorate life events, both large and small. This morning, I tied a ribbon around the Tree of Transformation just to commemorate this new phase in my life. And I would invite you, encourage you also to tie a ribbon to honor your place here and your commitment to making a difference. I believe in you. Thank you.
So much, Dana. I'd invite you to just take a moment to reflect on what you've just heard from Dana. You are not a congregation of spectators. You're a congregation of courageous, action-oriented doers. You've identified your passions. You've identified your convictions. And you've applied the courage to your convictions. And you've gone out and followed your dreams. You make this world a better place for yourself, and by doing so, you make it a better world for everyone. Go in peace.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.